Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today on Conversations with David Lewis, Bill O'Reilly. My guest is Bill O'Reilly. Usually I spend a long time introducing people, but I'm not going to bother. It's Bill O'Reilly. Need I say more? Bill, thanks again for coming on the show. Hey, it's nice to see you finally wrote a decent book. I mean, I actually enjoyed this one for the first time since your novel.
Jesus, now I'm in trouble because of a left-wing pinhead.
You took the Lord's name in vain.
If you like the book, then I'm going to have a lot of trouble.
No, I hated the other books because I get to see you bloviate.
I know, they made too much sense.
No, it's just you bloviating about the stuff you always bloviate about. Well, this is something new.
That's true. This is a little bit different. And, I think it's people that don't agree with me politically will enjoy the stories that I tell about growing up, and I take it from Elvis to the present day and American culture and stuff like that. So yeah, there is that added dimension.
Look, you're this big figure and this target that everybody gets to throw things at, whether they love you or hate you, and this book actually explains, you know, why you are the lunatic that you are.
Yeah, so. That's true. I mean, a bold, fresh piece of humanity is what my third grade teacher called me, and now, of course, this nun wants royalties from the book because I not really,
right.
But all my upbringing in Catholic school and my Irish Catholic parents, working class Levittown, my teaching experience because I was a high school teacher, wars I covered, I work with you at ABC, all of that has gone into the hopper to make me who I am today.
And I don't remember you asking my permission, to run the photograph with me in it, Bill. Where's my take? Where's my cut, baby?
You can get in line right behind a nun.
and the scariest thing about the book is this kind of Dorian Gray picture of you on the cover.
That was my first communion picture. Come on, Lewis.
Well, you know.
I'm the cutest kid in the world, and you know it.
Right, but then now you look like the picture in the attic. So
now I look like Bela Lugosi on a bad day in Transylvania. I understand. That's what working hard will do to you.
No, so let's get into the psyche of Bill O'Reilly. Let's discover who you really are and why you became that way. Bold, fresh piece of humanity. Tell me about Sister Lorana, and tell me about the lessons you learned from those early days.
Well, there was obviously a split in my neighborhood on Long Island, New York, where the kids who went to public school, they took one road, and then the kids who were bused, and it was a bus, we had to get on a bus, to Catholic school, took another road. And the Catholic school road was different than the public school road because right away it established boundaries. And, it was a daily look. This is good, this is bad, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. The concentration of that, no matter whether you accepted it or rejected it, made a deep impression on 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds particularly. So right away you have that ingrained in your mind. Now, I never really took the nuns all that seriously. It was like guerrilla warfare. It was more of a game. What could I get away with? How could I annoy them? Rather than, them tell me I'm going to go to hell if I eat a bologna sandwich on Friday. I never really bought into that. And then when the Catholic Church finally did away with that rule that you had to not eat meat on Friday, I might raise my hand. I said, well, sister, what about all the people who went to hell when they ate the hot dog? What happens to them? And then I got punished again. So that's the kind of guy I was in the school. Very inquisitive and very mischievous and all of that. But the public school guys, particularly as you get older, and they have as many boundaries. When the cigarettes came in, they were the guys that did that, the drugs and the alcohol, a little bit more than the Catholic school kids, who they would do it, and there were some really wild kids, but it was a little more hesitation. So that's number one. That's where we start there.
Describe the bold, fresh piece of humanity moment.
Well, I was back in the room in the third grade, and I was doing some thuggish activity. I don't exactly remember what it was, but it was something destructive, like, tying somebody up or doing something annoying, and the nun spotted me, and she was only about 5'2". And ran down the aisle, and William, you bold, fresh piece of humanity, took my hand and gave me a whack on the back of it with a ruler. Now, this was a nun who had 60 kids in a class. Every one of them could read, write, and do basic math by the time they were 8 years old. And trust me, I was the dimmest bulb on the block. But somehow, this small woman got our attention enough to teach us all that stuff. But I was a little annoyance to her, and, it was an interesting cat and mouse game we played.
Well, clearly she knew exactly who you were and who
she had my number. In fact,
and who
when
you
I was
would
working
turn out
with
to
you
be.
At ABC, running around the country doing reporting, I got a note from her, and she said, William, you still have the same expression. Yeah, she had my number from the jump.
Well, but oddly enough, it stuck. I mean, you are a practicing Catholic, and the lessons that they taught you there, and the lessons of your childhood, and the character that she identified are very much who you are today.
That's true. And when you, as I said, the impact on little children of having a very intense good versus evil, right versus wrong presentation stays. Whether you reject it later or not, it's there. And that was the formation. Plus, when I went home, I had pretty much the same thing. Working class Irish parents who basically towed the line. They did what they were told by their parents to do, very traditional upbringing. They went to work, they came home, they obeyed the law, they respected their country. So there was a double shot. And that stuff, even for the people who reject it, even for the people who get in trouble later and wind up prison, it's still there. And I used it. I harnessed all of that traditional stuff to formulate my adulthood and, to bring in a philosophy that's been very effective for me.
Yeah, I mean, the chapter headings, politics, self-reliance, fear, evil, religion, saving the world, standing your ground, standing for something, conservatives versus liberals, we know what you think about that. Heroes and zeros, of course, men of adventure, slugging it out, power, mysteries of the universe, and justice for all, end of story. I mean, these are all, chapters in the, psychosis of Bill O'Reilly.
Right. I mean, that's what the book is. But it's more than here's what I did now, and then I did this in 1969, and it's more than that. It's why I believe what I believe. You know, you make a mistake if you brand me as a conservative. I'm not. I'm an independent. And you make a mistake if you say I don't like liberal people. I hang with you. I mean, I don't mind any political thought if it's heartfelt and based on fact. I just don't like the Kool-Aid drinkers. And I don't like the people who also attack other people if they don't agree with them. And we go after those people hard. I don't like people who are disguising. I don't like the journalists who use their hard news pages to promote ideology. All of that kind of thing I fight against, and I tell you why I fight against it. But so that's what makes the book interesting, I think.
So talk about, your childhood thuggish buddies, some of whom I know, and the kind of adventures you got into back then.
Well, there was a code on the street that is so different from today, that your parents let you go out to play and they didn't see you for another 6 hours. It was like, after lunch, be back when the street lights are on. So you're 6, 7 years old and you're out and you just have to be self-reliant. Because there were teams of kids back then on the street and we're playing stickball and running around and playing all the games that we played. But there was no bike helmets and play dates, and if you got hurt or punched or whacked, you didn't run into mommy. And so the children back then became very self-reliant, very creative in amusing themselves, and parents were seen as almost an obstacle. Now, children in America are very dependent on their parents, and they look to them for guidance in every area, not only in, how to behave, but what do I do now, how come my social schedule isn't set up, all of that. We didn't have any of that, and that helped me, because when I got to be an adult, I was never looking for anybody to help me out. I was going to do it. I was going to be successful in a career. I was going to make my own way. I wasn't going to kiss anybody's butt or anything like that. And then in my social realm, I didn't depend on anybody to take me anywhere. I did it. I said, I want to go here. And I went. I want to play this sport. And I played it. I want to learn this. And I learned it. And that was the big difference between me and many Americans, in the sense that if I wanted to do it, I was going to do it. And nobody was going to stop me. And that was the key to my success, self-reliance and perseverance.
If you didn't already figure it out, I'm talking with Bill O'Reilly, the host of Fox News' O'Reilly Factor and author of a new book, A Bold, Fresh Piece of Humanity. What has surprised you, if anything, about the reaction to this book as compared to the others?
Well, it's going to be my biggest seller, and that's amazing in this terrible economic climate. So, I mean, I've sold 7 million books, Lewis.
Okay, yeah.
That's John Steinbeck numbers. we expected this book to be successful, but not this successful. And I think it's because of the entertainment value of the book, that it is, funny and entertaining and people get a lot out of it. And I also think it resonates with a lot of Americans, and they say, I don't want handouts. I don't want people telling me, what I should do and dragging me through life. And I you can identify with my stories. As I said, it's Elvis to the present day. It's all the big highlights. I was born at the right time, as Paul Simon says. We had Vietnam, we had the drugs, you had the disco, we had the me generation, then we had the computers taking over the world. I was right in the middle of all of that. I am in the middle of all of it. So, you know, that I think resonates with people. They see their own lives in my pages.
Well, the thing about you, of course, you just mentioned it, that's the most difficult for me, of course, is your love of disco. I mean, that's
I was a disco manimal. You know, I guess that's a New York thing. I don't know. But it was a lot of fun. And I didn't do the drugs or any of that stupid stuff. I always, you know, one of the interesting parts of the book is why I rejected drugs and alcohol. And I'm not going to tell you because I want people to read Bold Fresh. But, you know, I made that decision very early on not to do that.
Is there
and,
something?
And that has helped me dramatically. But in the disco time, it was just a lot of fun. There were a lot of people socializing. It's not like today where it's kind of grim out there and people are meeting, you know, each other on the internet through machines. They don't even get to talk to people face to face. It's kind of scary. So I was single back then and had a good time.
Indeed you did. Is there a part of the book that you thought people would react to that they didn't? Is there something
well,
you think you got away with?
Well, everybody reacted to the chapter Mysteries of the Universe, where I tell you what the best and worst things about American culture are. I mean, that, of course, I knew was going to go crazy, because everybody has their own opinions. I tell you what the worst song of all time is, the worst show, the best movie, you know. And also they react to the people that I think are the most powerful people in the country, which are not the usual suspects, and why. So when it gets personal, when I start to name names and name things that people are familiar with, they react very strongly one way or the other. But I got to tell you, I get, I'd say, 3,000 emails a day. I haven't got almost maybe 6 or 7 negatives on Bold Fresh, and it's been on the bestseller list for 12 weeks.
Well, the thing about it that I like is it's actually the Bill O'Reilly that I know from knowing you personally. It carries your personal voice and your humor, which doesn't come across as much in your regular media pontificating.
Well, look, I mean, it's a different job. This job is a personal book about me, and my job on television and radio is basically to deal with issues in a no-spin way, as you know.
Well, it's public that you're giving up the radio show. What are you going to do with all your time? Just find more people to torture?
Probably. You know, I mean, it takes, you know, to keep my show, my television show, where it is, the dominant number one primetime news show in the country, mm-hmm. That takes a lot of time. You know, I'm not just somebody who comes in the makeup chair and sits there and somebody hands them scripts. I write every word. I wrote every word of Bold Fresh. I write every word of The Factor. And I also exec produce, which is mean I pick the stories and I pick the lineup. And all of this takes an enormous amount of time, and it's getting more competitive in America as the machines take more of our attention. You got to give them something they can't get on the machines. So all of that was into my thinking about, you know, I can't be working 60, 65 hours a week anymore. I'm tired at the end of the week, too tired. I've got to have, you know, some creative energy, so that's why we made the decision.
Well, as always, Bill, a great pleasure, and thanks for being on the show.
All right, Lewis, and I'm glad you're doing well on the radio. And, you know, if people do buy Bold Fresh, they will see David Lewis's picture looking perplexed, as he always does, right in the middle of the book.